Where did we leave off last night? There we go. When Dorothy awoke, the sun was shining through the trees, and Toto had long been out chasing birds and squirrels. She sat up and looked around her. There was the scarecrow, standing patiently in the corner, waiting for her. "We must go search for water," she said for him. "Why do you want water?" he asked. Pardon me. "Why do you want water?" he asked. "To wash my face and clean after the dust of the road, and to drink, so the dry bread will not stick to my throat." "It must be inconvenient to make flesh," said the scarecrow thoughtfully, "for you must sleep and eat and drink. However, you have brains, and it's worth a lot of bother to be able to think properly." Excuse me again. They left the cottage and walked through the trees until they found a little spring of clear water, where Dorothy drank and bathed and ate her breakfast. She saw there was not much bread left in the basket, and the girl was thankful the scarecrow could not have to eat anything, for there was scarcely enough for her and Toto that day. When she had finished her meal, and she was about to go back to the road of yellow brick, she was startled to hear a deep groan nearby. "What was that?" she asked timidly. "I cannot imagine," replied the scarecrow, "but we can go and see." Just then, another groan reached their ears, and the sound seemed to have come from behind them. They turned and walked through the forest a few steps, when Dorothy discovered something shining in a ray of sunshine that fell between the trees. She ran to the place, and then stopped short with a cry of surprise. One of the big trees had been partly chopped through, and standing behind it, with an uplifted axe in his hands, was a man made entirely of tin. His head and arms and legs were jointed upon his body, but he stood perfectly motionless, as if he could not stir at all. Dorothy looked at him in amazement, and so did the scarecrow, while Toto barked sharply and made a snap at the tin legs, which hurt his teeth. "Did you groan?" asked Dorothy.
"Yes," answered the tin man. "I did. I've been groaning for over a year, and no one has ever heard me before or come to help me."
"What can I do for you?" she inquired softly, for she was moved by the sad voice in which the man spoke.
"Get an oil can and oil my joints," he answered. "They are rusted so badly that I cannot move them at all. If I am well oiled, I shall soon be right again. You'll find an oil can on the shelf of my cottage."
Dorothy at once ran back to the cottage and found the oil can, and then she returned and asked anxiously, "Where are your joints?"
"Oil my neck first," replied the Tin Woodman.
So she oiled it, and as it was quite badly rusted, the scarecrow took hold of the tin head and moved it gently from side to side until it worked freely, and then the man could turn it himself.
"Now oil the joints in my arms," he said.
And Dorothy oiled them, and the scarecrow bent them carefully until they were quite free from rust and as good as new. The Tin Woodman gave a sigh of satisfaction and lowered his axe, which he leaned against the tree.
"This is a great comfort," he said. "I have been holding that axe in the air ever since I rusted, and I'm glad to be able to put it down at last. Now, if you will oil the joints of my legs, I shall be all right once more."
So he oiled his legs until he could move them freely, and he thanked them again and again for his release, for he seemed a very polite creature and very grateful.
"I might have stood there always if you had not come along," he said. "You have so certainly saved my life. How did you happen to be here?"
"Well, we are on our way to the Emerald City to see the Great Oz," she answered, "and we stopped at your cottage to pass the night."
"Why do you wish to see Oz?" he asked.
"I want him to send me back to Kansas, and the Scarecrow wants him to put a few brains into his head," she replied. The Tin Woodman appeared to think deeply for a moment. Then he said,
"Do you suppose Oz could give me a heart?"
"Well, I guess so," Dorothy answered. "It would be as easy to give the Scarecrow brains."
"True," replied the Tin Woodman. "So, if you could allow me to join your party, I will also go to the Emerald City and ask Oz to help me. Goodness. Come along, said the Scarecrow heartily, and Dorothy added that she would be pleased to have his company. So the Tin Woodman shouldered his axe, and they all passed through the forest until they came to the road that was paved with yellow brick. The Tin Woodman had asked Dorothy to put the oil can in a basket, for, he said, if I should get caught in the rain and rust again, I would need the oil can badly. It was a bit of good luck to have their new comrade join the party, for soon after they began their journey, they came to a place where the trees and branches grew so thick over the road the travelers could not pass. But the Tin Woodman set to work with his axe and chopped so well that soon he cleared a passage for the entire party. Dorothy was thinking so earnestly as they walked along, she did not notice when the Scarecrow stumbled into a hole and rolled over to the side of the road. Indeed, he was called to oblige, Indeed, he was obliged to call her to help him up again. Why didn't you just walk around the hole? Asked the Tin Woodman. I don't know enough, replied the Scarecrow, cheerfully. My head's stuffed with straw, you know, and that is why I'm going to Oz to ask him for some brains. Oh, I see, said the Tin Woodman. But, after all, brains are not the best thing in the world. Have you any? Inquired the Scarecrow. No, my head is quite empty, answered the Woodman. But once I had brains and a heart also, so having tried them both, I would much rather have a heart. Why's that? Asked the Scarecrow. I will tell you my story, and then you will know. So, while they're walking through the forest, the Tin Woodman told the following story. I was born the son of a woodman who chopped down trees in the forest and sold the wood for a living. When I grew up, I too became a woodchopper, and after my father died, I took care of my old mother so that as long as she lived. Then I made up my mind that instead of living alone, I would marry so that I might not become lonely. Excuse me again. There was one of the Munchkin girls who was so beautiful that I soon grew to love her with all my heart. She, on her part, promised to marry me as soon as I could earn enough money to build a better house for her, so I set to work harder than ever. But the girl lived with an old woman who did not want her to marry anyone, for she was so lazy she wanted the girl to remain with her and do the cooking and the housework. So the old woman went to the Wicked Witch of the East and promised her 2 sheep and a cow if she'd prevent the marriage. Thereupon the Wicked Witch enchanted my axe so I was chopping away at my best one day, for I was anxious to get the new house and my wife as soon as possible. The axe slipped at once and cut off my left leg. At first it seemed a great misfortune, for I knew a one-legged man could not do very well as a woodchopper, so I went to the tinsmith and I had him make me a new leg out of tin. The leg worked very well, once I was used to it, but my action angered the Wicked Witch of the East, for she had promised the old woman that I should not marry the pretty Munchkin girl. When I began chopping again, my axe slipped and cut off my right leg. Again I went to the tinner, and again he made me a leg out of tin. After this, the enchanted axe cut off my arms, one after the other, but, nothing daunted, I had them replaced with tin ones. The Wicked Witch then made the axe slip and cut off my head. At first I thought that was the end of me, but the tinner happened to come along, and he made me a new head out of tin. I thought I had beaten the Wicked Witch then, and I worked harder than ever, but little I knew how cruel my enemy could be. She thought of a new way to kill my love for the beautiful Munchkin maiden, and made my axe slip again so that it cut through my body, splitting me into 2 halves. Once more, the tinner came to my help. He made me a body of tin, fastening my tin arms and legs and head to it, all by means of joints, so that I could move around as well as ever. But alas, I now had no heart, so I lost all of my love for the little Munchkin girl, and did not care whether I married her or not. I suppose she is still living with the old woman, waiting for me to come after her. My body shone so brightly in the sun that I felt very proud of it, and it did not matter now if my axe slipped, for it could not cut me. There was only one danger, that my joints would rust. but I kept an oil can in my cottage and took care to oil myself whenever I needed it. However, there came a day when I forgot to do this, and being caught in a rainstorm, before I thought of the danger, my joints had rusted, and I was left to stand in the woods until you came to help me. It was a terrible thing to undergo, but during the year I stood there, I had time to think that the greatest loss I had ever known was the loss of my heart. While I was in love, I was the happiest man on earth. But no one can love who has not a heart. And so I am resolved to ask Oz to give me one. If he does, I will go back to the Munchkin Maiden and I'll marry her. Both Dorothy and the Scarecrow had been greatly interested in the story of the Tin Woodman, and now they knew why he was so anxious to get a new heart. "All the same," said the Scarecrow, "I shall ask for brains instead of a heart, for a fool would know what to do with a heart if he had one." "I shall take the heart," replied the Tin Woodman, "for brains do not make one happy, and happiness is the best thing in the world." Dorothy didn't say anything. She was puzzled as if she could, for she was puzzled to know which of the two her friends was right. And she decided that if she could only get back to Kansas and Aunt Em, it did not matter much whether the woodman had the brains and the Scarecrow of her heart, or each got what he wanted. What worried her most was that the bread was nearly gone, and another meal for herself and Toto would empty the basket. To be sure, neither the woodman nor the Scarecrow ever ate anything, but she was not made of tin nor straw, and she could not live unless she was fed. All this time, Dorothy and her companions had been walking through the thick woods. The road was still paved with yellow brick, but these were much covered by dried branches and dead leaves from the trees, and the walking was not all that good. There were a few birds in this part of the forest, for the birds loved the... Pardon me. There were a few birds in this part of the forest. For birds love the open country where there's plenty of sunshine. But now and then there came a deep growl from some wild animal hidden amongst the trees. These sounds made the little girl's heart beat fast, for she did not know what made them. But Toto knew, and he walked close to Dorothy's side and did not even bark in return. "How long will it be," the child asked the Tin Woodman, "before we're out of the forest?" "I cannot tell," was the answer, "for I have never been to the Emerald City. But my father went there once when I was a boy, and he said it was a long journey through a dangerous country. Although near to the city where Oz dwells, the country is beautiful. But I am not afraid so long as I have my oil can. Nothing can hurt the Scarecrow. And while you bear upon your forehead the mark of the good witch's kiss, and that will protect you from harm." "But Toto," said the girl anxiously, "what will protect him?" "We must protect him ourselves if he is in danger," replied the Tin Woodman. Just as he spoke, there came from the forest a terrible roar, and the next moment a great lion bounded into the road. With one blow of his paw, he sent the Scarecrow spinning over and over to the edge of the road, and then he struck the Tin Woodman with sharp claws. But, to the lion's surprise, he could make no impression upon the tin, although the woodman fell over on the road and lay still. Little Toto, now that he had an enemy to face, ran barking towards the lion, and the great beast had opened his mouth to bite the dog, when Dorothy, fearing Toto would be killed and heedless of danger, rushed forward and slapped the lion upon the nose as hard as she could, while she cried out, "Don't you dare bite Toto! You ought to be ashamed of yourself, a big beast like you, to bite a poor little dog!"
"I didn't bite him," said the lion, as he rubbed his nose with his paw where Dorothy had hit it.
"No, but you tried to," she retorted. "You are nothing but a big coward."
"I know it," said the lion, banging his head in shame. "I've always known it. But how can I help it?"
"I don't know, I'm sure. But think of you striking a stuffed man like the poor Scarecrow."
"Is he stuffed?" asked the lion, in surprise as he watched her pick up the Scarecrow and set him upon his feet while she patted him into shape again.
Of course he's stuffed, replied Dorothy, who was still angry.
Well, that's why he went over so easily, remarked the lion. It astonished me to see him whirl about so. Is the other one stuffed also?
No, said Dorothy. He's made of tin. And she helped the woodman up again.
That's why he nearly blunted my claws, said the lion. When they scratched against the tin, it made a cold shiver run down my back. And what is that little animal you are so tender of?
He's my dog, Toto, answered Dorothy.
Is he made of tin or stuffed? Asked the lion.
Neither. He is a meat dog, said the girl.
Oh, he's a curious animal, and seems remarkably small now that I look at him. No one would think of biting such a little thing except a coward like me, continued the lion sadly.
What makes you a coward? Asked Dorothy, looking at the great beast in wonder, for he was as big as a small horse.
It's a mystery, replied the lion. I suppose I was born that way. All the other animals in the forest naturally expect me to be brave, for the lion is everywhere thought to be king of beasts. I learned that if I roared very loudly, every living thing was frightened and got out of my way. Whenever I met a man, I had been awfully scared, but I just roared at him, and he has always run away as fast as he could. If the elephants and the tigers and the bears had ever tried to fight me, I should have run myself. I'm a coward. But just as soon as they hear me roar, they all try to get away from me. And of course, I let them go.
But that isn't right. King of beasts shouldn't be a coward, said the scarecrow.
I know it, returned the lion, wiping a tear from his eye with the tip of his tail. It is my great sorrow, and it makes my life very unhappy. But whenever there is a danger, my heart begins to beat fast.
Perhaps you have heart disease, said the Tin Woodman.
It may be.
If you have, continued the Tin Woodman, you ought
to be glad, for it proves you have a heart. For my part, I have no heart, so I cannot have heart disease.
Perhaps, said the lion thoughtfully. If I had no heart, I should not be a coward.
Excuse me.
Have you brains? Asked the scarecrow.
I suppose so. I've never looked to see, replied the lion.
I'm gonna ask the Great Oz to give me some, remarked the scarecrow, for my head is stuffed with straw.
And I'm going to ask him to give me a heart, said the woodman.
And I'm going to ask him to send Toto and me back to Kansas, added Dorothy.
Do you think Oz could give me courage? Asked the cowardly lion.
Just as easily it could give my brains, said the scarecrow.
Or give me a heart, said the Tin Woodman.
Or send me back to Kansas, said Dorothy.
Then, if you don't mind, I'll go with you, said the lion. My life is simply unbearable without a bit of courage.
You will be very welcome, answered Dorothy, for you will help keep away the other wild beasts. It seems to me they must be more cowardly than you if they are to allow you to scare them so easily.
They really are, said the lion, but that doesn't make me any braver, and as long as I know myself to be a coward, I shall be unhappy.
So once more, the little company set off upon the journey, the lion walking with stately strides at Dorothy's side. Toto didn't approve of this new comrade at first, for he could not forget how nearly he had been crushed between the lion's great jaws. But after a time, he became more at ease, and presently Toto and the cowardly lion had grown to be good friends. During the rest of that day, there was no other adventures to mar the peace of their journey. Once, indeed, the Tin Woodman stepped upon a beetle that was crawling across the road and killed the poor little thing. This made the Tin Woodman very unhappy, for he was always careful not to hurt any living creature, and as he walked along, he wept several tears of sorrow and regret. These tears ran slowly down his face and over the hinges of his jaw, and there they rusted. When Dorothy presently asked him a question, the Tin Woodman could not open his mouth, for his jaws were tightly rusted together. He became greatly frightened at this, and made many motions to Dorothy to relieve him. She could understand. The lion was also puzzled to know it was wrong, but the scarecrow seized the oil can from Dorothy's basket and oiled the woodman's jaws, so that after a few moments he could talk as well as before. "This will serve me a lesson," said he, "to look where I step, for if I should kill another bugger beetle, I should surely cry again, and crying rusts my jaw so that I cannot speak." Thereafter he walked very carefully, with his eyes on the road, and when he saw a tiny ant rolling by, he would step over it so as not harm it. The Tin Woodman knew very well that he had no heart, and therefore he took great care to never be cruel or unkind or anything. "You people with hearts," he said, "have something to guide you, and need never do wrong, but I have no heart, and so I must be very careful. When Oz gives me a heart, of course, I needn't mind so much." What do you say? One more? I think we can do one more. They were obliged to camp out at night under a large tree in the forest, for there were no houses near. The tree made a good thick covering to protect them from the dew, and the Tin Woodman chopped a great pile of wood with his axe, and Dorothy built a splendid fire that warmed her and made her less lonely. She and Toto ate the last of her bread, and now she didn't know what they would do for breakfast. "If you wish," said the lion, "I will go into the forest and kill a deer for you. You can roast it by the fire, since your tastes are so peculiar that you prefer cooked food, and then you will have a very good breakfast." "Don't, please don't," begged the Tin Woodman. "I should certainly weep if you killed the poor deer, and then my jaws would rust again." But the lion went away into the forest and found his own supper. No one ever knew what it was, for he didn't mention it. And the scarecrow found a tree full of nuts and filled Dorothy's basket with them, so that she would not be hungry for a long time. She thought this was very kind and thoughtful of the scarecrow, and she laughed heartily at the awkward way in which the poor creature picked up the nuts. His padded hands were so clumsy, and the nuts so small, that he dropped almost as many as he put into the basket. But the scarecrow did not mind how long it took him to fill the basket, for it enabled him to keep away from the fire, as he feared a spark might get into his straw and burn him up. So he kept a good distance away from the flames, and only came near to cover Dorothy with dry leaves when she lay down to sleep. These kept her very snug and warm, and she slept soundly until morning. When it was daylight, the girl bathed her face in a little rippling brook, and soon after they all started towards the Emerald City. This was to be an eventful day for the travelers. They had been hardly walking an hour when they saw before them a great ditch that crossed the road and divided the forest as far as they could see on either side. It was a very wide ditch, and when they crept up to the edge and looked into it, they could see it was also very deep, and there were many big, jagged rocks at the bottom. The sides were so steep that none of them could climb down, and for a moment it seemed their journey must end. "What do we do?" asked Dorothy despairingly.
"I haven't the faintest idea," said the Tin Woodman.
But the lion shook his shaggy mane and looked thoughtful. The scarecrow said, "Well, we cannot fly, I'm certain, neither can we climb down the great ditch. Therefore, if we cannot jump over it, we must stop where we are."
"I think I could jump over it," said the cowardly lion, after measuring the distance carefully in his mind.
"Then we all rot," said the scarecrow. "For you can easily carry us all over on your back, one at a time."
"Well, I'll try it," said the lion. "Who will go first?"
"I will," declared the scarecrow. "For if you found that you could not jump over the gulf, Dorothy will be killed, and Tin Woodman badly dented in the rocks below. But if I'm on your back, it won't matter that much, for the fall won't hurt me at all."
"I am terribly afraid of falling myself," said the cowardly lion, "but I suppose there's nothing to do but try to do it. So, get on my back, and we will make the attempt." The scarecrow sat upon the lion's back, and the big
Beast walked to the edge of the gulf and crouched down. "Why don't you run and jump?" asked the Scarecrow. "Because that isn't the way we lions do these things," he replied. And then, giving a great spring, he shot through the air and landed safely on the other side. They were all gratefully pleased to see how easily he did it, and after the Scarecrow had got down from his back, the lion sprang across the ditch again. Dorothy thought she would go next, so she took Toto in her arms and climbed on the lion's back, holding tightly to his mane with one hand. The next moment, it seemed that she was flying through the air, and then, before she had time to think about it, she was safe on the other side. The lion went a third time and got the Tin Woodman, and then all sat down for a few moments to give the beast a chance to rest, for his great leaps had made his breath short, and he panted like a big dog that had been running too long. They found the forest very thick on the side, and it looked dark and gloomy. After the lion had rested, they started along the road of yellow brick, silently wondering, each in his own mind, if ever they would come to the end of the woods and reach the bright sunshine again. To add to this comfort, they soon heard strange noises in the depths of the forest. And the lion whispered to them that it was this part of the country that the Kaleidas lived.
"What are the Kaleidas?" asked the girl.
"They are monstrous beasts with bodies like bears and heads like tigers," replied the lion, "and with claws so long and sharp that they could tear me in two as easily as I could kill Toto. I am terribly afraid of the Kaleidas."
"I'm not surprised you are," returned Dorothy. "They must be dreadful beasts."
The lion was about to reply when suddenly came to another gulf across the road. But this one was so broad and deep, the lion knew at once he could not leap across it. So they sat down to consider what they should do, and after serious thought, the Scarecrow said,
"Here is a great tree standing close to the ditch. If the Tin Woodman can drop it down so it will fall to the other side, well, we can walk across it easily."
"That is a first-rate idea," said the lion. "One would almost suspect you had brains in your head instead of straw."
The woodman set to work at once, and so sharp was his axe that the tree was soon chopped nearly through. Then the lion put his strong front legs against the tree, and he pushed it with all his might, and slowly the big tree tipped and fell with a crash across the ditch, with its top branches on the other side. They had just started to cross this queer little bridge when a sharp growl made them all look up, and to their horror, they saw running towards them two great beasts, like bodies like bears, and the heads of tigers.
"They are the Kaleidas," said the Cowardly Lion, beginning to tremble.
"Quick," said the Scarecrow, "let us..." "Pardon me."
"Quick," said the Scarecrow, "let us cross over." I gotta remember the voices. So... So Dorothy went first, holding Toto in her arms. The Tin Woodman followed, and the Scarecrow came next. The lion, although he was certainly afraid, turned to face the Kaleidas, and then he gave so loud and terrible a roar that Dorothy screamed and the Scarecrow fell over backwards, while even the fierce beast stopped short and looked at him in surprise. But... seeing they were bigger than the lion, and remembering that there were two of them and only one of them, the Kaleidas again rushed forward, and the lion crossed over the bridge and turned to see what they would do next. Without stopping an instant, the fierce beasts also began to cross the tree, and the lion said to Dorothy,
"We are lost, for they will surely tear us to pieces with their sharp claws. But stand close behind me, and I will fight them as long as I am alive."
Wait a minute, called the Scarecrow. He had been thinking what best to be done, and now he asked the woodman to chop away at the end of the tree that rested on their side of the ditch. The Tin Woodman Make yourself comfortable. Good girl. Yeah, the dog, obviously.
father. He asked the Tin Woodman to chop away at the end of the tree that rested on their side of the ditch. The Tin Woodman began to use his axe at once, and just as the two colliders were nearly across, the tree fell with a crash into the gulf, carrying the ugly, snarling brutes with it, and both were dashed to pieces on the sharp rocks at the bottom.
"Well," said the Cowardly Lion, drawing a long breath of relief, "I see we're going to live a little while longer, and I am glad of it, for it must be a very uncomfortable thing not to be alive. Those creatures frightened me so badly, my heart is beating yet."
"Ah," said the Tin Woodman sadly, "I wish I had a heart to beat." Their adventure made the travelers more anxious than ever to get out of the forest, and they walked so fast that Dorothy became tired and had to ride on the lion's back. To their great joy, the trees became thinner the further they advanced, and in the afternoon they suddenly came upon a broad river flowing swiftly just before them. On the other side of the river, they could see the road of yellow brick running through a beautiful country, with green meadows dotted with bright flowers, and all the road bordered with trees hanging full of delicious fruits. They were greatly pleased to see this delightful country before them.
"How shall we cross the river?" asked Dorothy.
"That's easily done," replied the Scarecrow. "The Tin Woodman must build us a raft so we can float to the other side."
So the woodman took his axe and began to chop down small trees to make a raft. And while he was busy at this, the Scarecrow found on the riverbank a tree full of fine fruit. This pleased Dorothy, who had eaten nothing but nuts all day, and she made a hearty meal of the ripe fruit. But it takes time to make a raft, and even when one is industrious and untiring as the Tin Woodman. And when night came, the work was not done. So they found a cozy place under the trees where they slept well until the morning. And Dorothy dreamed of the Emerald City and of the good Wizard of Oz, who would soon send her back to her own home again. I'd say that's a good place to stop. Thank you.